We have seen in the previous lessons that from the industrial point of view, it is very important the so-called time stamping concept. That is to associate to an event, for example, the acquisition of the emission of a signal, the instant of time into which the acquisition or the emission have been take place or should take place. This brought us to conclude that we need a model of the representation of the time into the machine. We have to observe that the concept of time is very suggested by intuition, but it is also very difficult to define in a precise and accurate way. Of course, we are not going into a philosophical dissertation, but it is clear that a correct time definition is very useful and mandatory in many applications, in particular in the control of many processes, and if we want to be sure that our activities respect the constraint of being done in real time, it is necessary that this concept should be described and depicted with high detail level, at least in relation to the applications into which we are interested. It's very important to notice that the time has been frequently put in correspondence with the phenomena, with the evolution of the phenomena, and we can say that sometimes the time has been conceived as a container into which the events take place, but we could also say, on the other hand, that sometimes the same phenomena can be considered as primary concepts that somehow cause the time flux, the time, let's say, running. In the course, the approach that will be followed is, let's say, the second one. In other words, we will adopt, we will consider some particular phenomena called clocks that correspond to events generators assumed as regular, and these clocks will be taken as instruments that quantify the time behavior, the time duration, and that will be on turn put in relationship with the other phenomena whose duration must be measured, and in this case really related to the industrial processes, to the applications that we have to control. The model of time to which typically we refer is based on a bionivocal correspondence between time instants and real numbers, with a completely arbitrary choice of the origin. With such an assumption, the time instant assumes the proper characteristics of the real numbers, such as continuity, existence of a limit, derivative, integral, and these properties allow the analytical management of these time instants that reflects the usual approach with which, for example, the law of the physics are defined. The concept of instant with a time duration equal to zero is not really easy to be put in correspondence with the physical phenomena that are considered as clocks. In fact, whatever is the physical phenomenon, the physical law on which the clock is based, this in any case is finite, also very short with respect to the processes that are measured by means of it. In every temporal scale are considered null those time durations during which the phenomena under examination don't change, do not provide any perceptible variation. Therefore, those phenomena are considered as instantaneous. Words, given a certain context of phenomena that must be correlated to the time, it is necessary to identify a phenomenon characterized by a velocity of some orders of magnitude, many even orders of magnitude faster with respect to the phenomena under examination, so as we can consider it as a good clock. In particular, electronic phenomena are typically very good candidates to the role of clocks, and typically the so-called square wave oscillators, whose edges present commutation times very short with respect to the phenomena that we have to measure, I'm talking about a few nanoseconds, so as to consider them really neglectable. Means that if for the human mind the model of time that must be used is continuous, for the computing systems that we will describe, the model of time that must be used is discrete, and this corresponds both to the representation of the values that we will be employed, and in the time evolution, step time evolution produced by the instruction execution. We call clock an information source about the current time, whose domain is made of natural numbers, unsigned integer, coded with a suitable number of bits, typically 16, sometimes even 24 or 32, suitable, I repeat, to the range of values that must be represented. The model of time is typically considered as linear, that is, one-to-one correspondence between the real time and the local representation, monotonic and discrete. We define as local time unit the duration of real time, of absolute time, that corresponds to a clock duration taken as 1. For example, let's consider an oscillator whose working frequency is 100 MHz. The local time unit is 10 nanoseconds. Or, for example, let's consider an oscillator whose working frequency is 50 MHz. The local time unit will be 20 nanoseconds. This time unit represents the time resolution, and it is a property of the local representation of the time itself. On the other hand, we define local time base that multiple value, typically integer, of the local time unit that represent the period of the cyclic phenomenon that is assumed as clock, and therefore corresponds to the duration of time necessary for upgrading the so-called clock variable. This local time base represents the so-called time granularity of the model of the time, and it is a property of the physical behavior of the clock that we took. The case into which the local time base is equal to 1 implies the correspondence between resolution and granularity. The case into which the local time base is greater than 1 is particularly convenient if we prefer to keep a time unit conventional. Also, we don't have at our disposal a cyclic phenomenon corresponding in terms of duration. For example, if we consider the ancient personal computers, typically the value of the local time base was 55 milliseconds. That is the clock variable that the operating system put at the disposal of the applications present a local time unit, that is a resolution close to 1 millisecond, with a granularity local time base equal to 55 milliseconds. In other words, the time has been represented in milliseconds, but it is upgraded by an interrupt that happens every 55 milliseconds. This typically is due to the fact that the local time unit is a cyclic phenomenon whose duration could be suitable for certain processes but not for all those processes that can be executed by a machine, by a microprocessor. So we have the need of an adaptable, let's say, multiple number that provides us several clocks more adequate to the duration of the process that is under temporization. If we have a UTL equal to 1 millisecond, this is suitable for a process whose duration is in the order of the milliseconds, but for a process whose periodicity is in the order of minutes or of hours, clearly to upgrade the clock, I mean the timestamping of this process every milliseconds, is completely useless. In practice, for every microprocessor, we assume that at least one clock variable is defined, so as it increments its own value of an amount equal to BTL, the local time base instance, into which particular event take place that we will call ticks. These events occur at absolute time intervals, regular and equal to BTL unit of time. Considering slide 54, we call T uppercase the time represented by the clock, and T lowercase the absolute time, the so-called real time. The behavior of this clock can be expressed by a function into the domain of the time, t equal ft lowercase, where t uppercase is defined as the product of an integer number n time the local time base BTL. And the property of the real time is that it is included into a range whose lower extreme lower edge is n time btl time utl, and whose upper limit is n plus 1 time btl time utl. N belongs to the natural number set. This way we have a model of the time discrete that represents with the same value all those instants contained into an interval between two consecutive ticks. In the following, for the sake of simplicity, we will assume that the same unit of measurement will be assumed for t uppercase and t lowercase. That is, the local unit time will be 1. The errors that we have adopting as a measurement of the time a local time clock variable may consist of two terms, basically. Errors due to the phenomenon that is assumed as clock, they are called precision errors, and errors due to the granularity, they are called quantization errors. Let's look at the first group of errors, the errors of the phenomenon. This means that the phenomenon assumed as a clock has not an ideal behavior. In particular, we will define as precise, that is, we will consider an ideal clock, that clock for which every n, we can say that the absolute time at the tick number n, at the event number n, minus the absolute time at the tick n minus 1, the previous tick, is equal to the local time base plus an average error that typically is equal to 0. The precision of a clock expresses the regularity of its own ticks and the correspondence of their period with the value BTL time UTL. If the errors are systematic, that is, if the clock is poorly accurate, the periodic phenomenon that is assumed as a source of time measurement features a non-correct frequency, a non-right frequency for our purposes. Instead, if the errors are on average equal to 0, that is, the clock features poor repeatability, the phenomenon is not rigorously periodic. Better, often the mechanism by which the value of t uppercase is upgraded is not regular. Such a kind of irregularities typically compensate and electronically speaking are called jitters. On the other hand, we define correct at the absolute time t lowercase a clock for which the following relationship is valid. The absolute value of the difference between the local time t uppercase and the real time t lowercase is lower than the local time base BTL. The correctness of a clock expresses the synchronization between the local time and the absolute time, including the intrinsic quantization error BTL. A precise clock, if it is correct at the real time t, is correct for every instant of absolute time successive than t. words, the precision expresses the capability of maintaining the correctness. The correctness is lost in presence of a systematic inaccuracy, that is, if the average error is different from zero, while the correctness is kept, is maintained, if the error on average is null. The precision can be, for this reason, quantified, expressed with the ratio BTL divided by the average error, and with clocks based on quartz oscillators, typically is set around 10^4, 10^6. Notice that systematic errors present into a clock cause a drift, that is, a displacement, a difference between the time represented locally by the quantity t uppercase and the real time represented by the variable t lowercase. This drift will grow up and in the long time will bring to error that cannot be accepted. It is a common experience that no clock, no real clock, will maintain forever the drift within finite ranges. Consider, for example, what happens when we need to regulate periodically our watches. Moreover, notice that this kind of problem depends on the particular characteristic of the time that doesn't have an absolute origin. On the contrary, when we measure intervals of times, durations, I mean, we don't have such a kind of phenomena, and the error by which we are affected, by which the measurement is affected, depends only on to the accuracy of the clock and not on the instant into which it is read. It is important to notice that with this discrete time model, consequences take place due to the quantization errors. We must take into account these problems. We remember that for sake of simplicity, we will assume that the UTL, the local time unit, will be equal to 1. Therefore, the BTL, the granularity or local time base, will correspond to the interval between two consecutive ticks, both measuring the local time unit and considering the absolute time measurement. For example, think about that reference we made to the ancient personal computers into which BTL was 55 milliseconds. This said, we can define a couple of rules that characterize such a kind of errors. The first concerns the possibility of establishing an order between two events. That is, it is not possible on the basis of timestamping that it is necessary to assign to a couple of events to identify a temporal, a time order between events that happen between two consecutive ticks. The other concept that we want to point out is the so-called contemporaneity. That is, events that take place in the interval between two consecutive ticks are considered in the local representation of the time as contemporaneous, also their distance, their real time distance, is dt less lower than btl. These concepts are shown in slide 56 of the text. A third issue that we want to highlight concerns the measurement of intervals. If we consider events whose distance is delta t in the absolute time, and if these events are observed in the local representation of the time with a distance that we identify as m of delta t, like in the formula shown in slide 56, we can say that the measurement, the local measurement of the time m delta t, is included between two limits. The lower is n time btl, and the upper is n plus 1 time btl. N is an integer value that is given by the ratio between delta t and btl approximated to the lowest integer. For example, consider two events whose distance is 57 milliseconds. On the basis of the time stamping that is assigned to them, those events can be locally represented as with a distance equal to 55 milliseconds or 110 milliseconds. Vice versa, if we consider events with a temporal distance n time btl in the local time, n is an integer number greater than zero, so positive, these events can have a real-time absolute distance that satisfies the relationship shown in the slide 56, n minus 1 time btl is the lower limit of a fork, of a range, whose upper limit is n plus 1 time btl. The distance, delta t, will be included between these two limits. This means that events that locally has a distance equal to 55 milliseconds. When I say locally, I mean concerning the local representation of the time inside the machine. Okay, these events can are distant in the real absolute time from 0 up to 100 milliseconds. And clearly, you see this well represented into the figure in the lower part of the slide, when you can consider a couple of ticks. For example, the tick that is in the right part of the horizontal axis, the time axis, and the tick that is in the left part of the time axis. Then you see those dotted lines. The first one is closer to the left tick, and the second one is close to the second tick in the right part of the axis. Okay, those ticks have probably a real-time distance that is very close to two intervals, that is In the figure we brought 109 milliseconds, that is an example, but clearly you see that the time distance is approximately a little bit less than two intervals long 55 milliseconds. But since one event is into an interval and the other event is in the other interval, the local representation of their distance is 55. Conversely, the local representation will be the same, again, I mean 55, if you consider the other couple of events, the other two dotted lines, that are very close to the center of the horizontal axis, that is the tick put in the middle between the two externals, one, the two on the left and on the right. These two events are one in the first interval and the second in the other interval, and they are very close to the tick that separates the two intervals. So their distance in time is probably very short, for example 2 milliseconds as an example, but nevertheless, since they belong to two different intervals, their local representation in the model of the machine will be again 55 milliseconds. As previously said, the requirements in terms of granularity are different considering the different roles that the time can have in the several industrial applications we can face with. To differentiate a thin granularity from maybe a more raw one that is required in the activation of the processes, design an architecture as the one that is shown in slide 57 of our sequence of slides is shown. In this figure we see two independent counters that are fed by the same train of pulses generated by an oscillator and let's say properly managed by a prescaler unit. But let's see on a step-by-step basis all the components that characterize such a kind of architecture. First of all, we have an oscillator whose frequency is in the order of megahertz. For example, it can generate pulses from 1 up to 20 megahertz working frequency. Then we have a prescaler block that basically is a frequency divider that will provide a pulse in output every n pulses counted into input. So basically the frequency of the output pulses is slower than the one of those achieved in input. This is the reason why we call this device frequency divider. And the division factor, the division ratio, can be selected. Typically, commercial off-the-shelf components can allow 1, 2, 3, sometimes 4 possible options. In this case, we make the hypothesis that the prescaler can select 3 division ratios, 1, 8, 256. So we can give in output pulses as the same frequency than we received in input. We can have, let's say, a division factor that is very high, 256, or we have a division factor that is, let's say, moderate, and 8 is a reasonable value that we can select. Moreover, we have the couple of counters that receive this sequence of pulses. The first is called the timer. This timer is used typically to perform a time measurement. It is a cyclic binary counter with n bits, and it can generate, if necessary, an interrupt request every overflow. The timer is equipped with an output, let's say, buffer register, TRB, that captures all the n bit of the timer itself and provides an acquisition, let's say, of the present content of the timer for interfacing with the microprocessor. Moreover, we have the second counter, the so-called TBC, that stands for time base counter. The role of such a kind of device is, let's say, to generate a time basis that establishes the possibility of requiring a certain action when the corresponding interrupt to the expiring of the time basis is generated. In other words, the time base counter will raise up an interrupt request toward the microprocessor when a TBV instance of time have passed, let's say. In this sense, the TBC counter is more flexible in the determination of the interval of time into which we are interested, because it lets to the programmer to set the temporal basis writing the suitable value in the TBV register. Instead, the timer is less flexible, and I mean with this that the interrupt will be raised up when the computational capability, the counting capability of the timer has been exhausted, without no options let to the programmer. On the other hand, the timer will be reasonably used also to perform successive acquisition of its own content, just to establish the measurement of intervals of time. Notice that just for sake of simplicity, we have indicated in the figure a single couple oscillator prescaler. This is a reasonable choice, but depending on the kind of times that we have to generate and the oscillator we are equipped with, the number of the prescaler could be more than one. Typically, the ratio between the temporal granularity of the timer and the temporal granularity provided by the interrupt ticks of the time base counter are 100 to 1. That is, the ratio is that the bigger one will be related to the section of the timer, while the shortest one will be related to the so-called time base counter section. And this is, let's say, a choice that is suitable for many of the possible applications that we can conceive. But of course, this is not an absolute rule, so we can differentiate as we prefer such a kind of general scheme that we have described. Let's go a little bit into more into the details about the two sections, considering the first one, the so-called timer section, and the second one, the so-called time-based section. I'm referring to the slide number 58. In this case, we can say about the timer section that the granularity of the time measurement is the ratio between 2 power k divided by f. F is the frequency of the pulses generated by the oscillator, while 2 power k is the division ratio given by the prescaler. So, as we have understood, the ratio that we can select is at maximum 2 power the number of the bits of the prescaler. We have also said that this k factor is selectable typically by the programmer, so in our case k could be 1, 8 or 256 depending on our needs. This is the granularity and the resolution as well that we can set, while the definition of the UTL and the BTL for such a kind of device is BTL is 2 power n, that is when we reach the overflow, that is the local time base such a kind of section provides. The timer period will be 2 power n time 2 power k divided by f, and the local time unit will be 2 power k divided by f. On the other hand, if we consider indeed the time base section, again we can say that the resolution corresponds to the local time unit and is 2 power k divided by f. But now the BTL, the local time base, is the TBV, that is the time base value that can be written into the register in input to the TBC counter. So the period of the ticks that such a kind of section can provide is TBV time 2 power k divided by f. In this case, the granularity is TBV. In the previous case, the granularity of the time measurement is 2 power n. Concerning the mechanism used cyclically to reset the counter TBC with the time base value, two kind of solutions are typically designed. First of all, an automatic reloading that provides to reset the counter contemporaneously with the generation of the interrupt request, and using the TBV value that at the initialization phase was written into a suitable status register internal to the counter itself. A second method foresees the explicit reset of the time base value with a write operations, a write instruction performed by the interrupt routine itself. Notice that in this second case, after the interrupt request generation, the counting will continue module 2 power m, if the counter features m bits, up to when the original value, the TBP value, is reloaded. And this brings to an accumulation of possible delays in the answers to the interrupt requests with the latencies that sometimes are considerable. In other words, the counting of a new period doesn't start exactly at the end of the previous interval, but only after that all the time necessary for the activation and the execution of at least part of the interrupt service routine has been expired, has been passed. A very useful approach to avoid the accumulation of these delays consists into adding the value TBV, the time-based value, to the present counting value that has been reached in the meanwhile, instead of an explicit reloading of the TBV value. In such a way, the time that in the meanwhile has passed is completely ignored, and this avoids to introduce in the interrupt response a latency that sooner or later will create troubles in the management of such a kind of, let's say, delicate processes. Referring to the slide 58 in the lower left part, the figure shows clearly the problem that we have yet described. The end of a previous interval of time doesn't correspond to the beginning of the next one. In the middle, we have time lost to the management of the interrupt routine, and this time is lost in the new counting of the next interval. So the proposal is, as it is written into the slide, to add to the present value of count. Count means what is inside in the counter in the moment into which we reload, better, we reset the time-based value. So count plus TBV, and this sum is made in module 2 power m. That is, it corresponds to subtract from count plus TBV the value of 2 power m. Remember that the counter is a binary counter, free running, so when it reaches 0, it will start from the maximum possible value, that is 2 power m minus 1. But what is the present value of count? Consider that we are at the end of interval of time measurement. We had an interrupt, so after the interrupt, the counter starts from the maximum possible counting value, that is 2 power m, and then from that moment up to when the time-based value is reloaded, x instance of time are passing. So in the hypothesis that the counter is a decremental one, the present value of the counter itself is 2 power m minus x. To this value we add TBV, we said, and module 2 power m. This corresponds to subtract 2 power m from this value. It is clear that what remains is the value of TBV minus x. That is, in practice, we have reloaded the time-based value, but we cancel by it all the time that passed from the end of the previous interval measurement up to the moment now into which we are resetting the value of the time base value. So that delay that is present in such a procedure due to the time for the activation of the interrupt, the time for performing the first instructions is not lost, and we are completely aligned between the measurement of the time and the real time running that we want to keep under measurement. To take a conclusion after all these considerations, we can say that through this double clock management, the time measurement relative to the processes is typically performed by the response routine to the ticks of the time base counter, while instead the upgrading of date and hour can be made both using the ticks of the TBC section or the overflows of the timer section when poor approximation is chosen by the programmers. Instead, for more refined measurements relative to the intervals of time we face with, those values that are available at the output of the timer counter section will be more conveniently adopted. Notice, moreover, that the period of the timer section is typically the longest interval of time that can be measured without ambiguity. Longer intervals of time can be measured by using the variable that can be stored through a software routine inside the microprocessor by paying attention, however, to the time displacement between the event timer overflow and the event software upgrading of the internal variable of the microprocessor. In fact, during the interval of time between the hardware event and the software event, there is inconsistency between the most significant part of the software variable and the lowest significant part of the same variable that is relative to the content of the timer register. After this long digression, let's come back to the original problem that required to us the description of the model of the representation of the time inside the machine. That is, let's consider the acquisition of pulses to evaluate the velocity or the frequency of a pulse train that is associated to a certain physical process. We know that using incremental encoders, the information, the digital output information they provide, corresponds to a velocity that could be linear or angular, including a suitable scale factor. This is a typical industrial problem that deserves attention. Now, let's analyze the main choices in terms of design and the correspondent temporal performances and the correspondent accuracy that can be achieved so as to be able to evaluate the margin of feasibility. First of all, let's consider the initial conditions of the problem. The number of pulses per every meter made by the object that we are considering, or pulses per round if the object is rotating. These pulses are provided by the encoder, and the ratio between pulses and linear distance, or pulses divided by the rounds, is the inverse of the granularity of the transducer. This datum determines the scale factor to evaluate the measurement in engineering units and the so-called spatial quantization error. Second initial condition is related to the range of frequencies that are under measurement. We will call them minimum f, f min, and maximum f, f max, that must not be confused with the frequency with which the measurement is taken. Finally, the time duration of the pulses provided by the encoder, the minimum time duration that usually must be obtained considering the maximum frequency that we want to measure. In other words, the encoder should be enough fast to rotate at the maximum frequency that we want to analyze and acquire, and the duration of the pulses of the encoder will be more or less half the period corresponding to that frequency. Another issue with which we have to face is related to the specifics of the dynamic measurement of the velocity that can be obtained on the basis of several considerations relative to the application we are considering. First of all, measurements must be produced within a certain frequency. We could say that this frequency can be in some sense assimilated to the sampling frequency with respect to the particular process we are considering. Also, this is not the very rigorous way to call it. It is clear that if the measurement is very accurate but very slow, it could be perhaps useless if the process that we are trying to control is very fast. So we have to produce such a kind of measurement within a certain time. Moreover, during the acquisition, we can be affected by some delays, the most significant of which is the delay between the instant of time into which an event can be obtained, or the instant of time when the measurement is provided, and the instant of time to which such a kind of event or such a kind of measurement refers to. Such a kind of delays will be added to those that we have already described in the past, and to those that will be present in the regulation chain. So we must keep them as low as possible to avoid that the sum of all the delays will bring the system completely out of control. Finally, we have to consider the so-called measurement errors, that is the difference between the measurement provided and the true value that we want to assign to a certain physical magnitude. The measurement errors can be expressed as absolute or relative, and they typically must be less than a certain value assigned by the chief of the project, EA, absolute error, or ER, relative error. The absolute errors are typically given in magnitude units corresponding to the physical magnitude that must be measured, I mean kilos, pascal, meters, seconds, and so on. While instead the relative errors are generally expressed in percentage and can be specified if related to the value of the single measurement ERM or if they are related to the full scale of the measurement ERF. Notice that absolute errors, even very small but affecting values of the range that are at the beginning of the scale, I mean very low themselves, will bring to percentual errors very, very high and unacceptable. Notice also that in engineering problems, typically errors are specified as relative percentage values.